The story of my thin place is not a tale of a trip to a Celtic abbey, nor is it even about hiking in the Rocky Mountains or hiking anywhere. I, of course, have stories I could tell about these more obvious sites of beauty, but none have stayed with me or transformed me in quite the ways that happened on the concrete-covered, slightly run-down tennis courts in the heart of central Denver. It was the spring of 2009, and I had not too long before that returned to my tennis game after nearly 15 years before. I was on the courts near the Botanic Gardens in that park right across the street, if you're familiar with it. There were basketball players in the court next to us that were loud and distracting. I was feeling irritated. I'd been telling myself to get focused, get my head in the game, stop making so many mistakes. If the ball players would just be quieter, if the courts weren't so junky, or if I would have gotten more sleep the night before, or the night before that, or... See, I had a one-year-old and three-year-old at the time, and I was in my second year of seminary. Life was hectic and intense, and I just wanted to play tennis. We were changing sides when suddenly something happened. Something in me changed. I just saw the sunset and the sky. The sky was so large, and I was so small. The sun was sinking down into the Rockies. The clouds were covered in red, orange, yellow. I felt my feet hit the concrete, one and the other. Like as if for the first time in that whole day, maybe the whole year, I was breathing in and out. How good the air felt. And I heard the basketball players, they were laughing. I saw us all as a whole in the middle of this great park with these giant trees. Oh, the trees! Why hadn't I noticed them before? Down the hills from the court, I saw soccer players in the grass running and scheming and looking out beyond the park, this city that I loved. So many stories and lives bumping into each other, becoming something together, trying to learn and grow, struggling and dreaming. It was all so beautiful. I felt overwhelmingly grateful, filled with joy. How in the world was I so lucky to be on those courts at that time, to see and feel all of this, to be alive in the midst of all this beauty, just to be a part? I felt both utter calm and yet also filled with creative, dynamic, and abundant energy. This brief and random moment on the tennis courts was a transforming experience for me because it was a direct contrast to the usual way I'd been playing tennis, a direct contrast, okay, to how I'd been doing much of my life. I had never played tennis as an experience of beauty or joy or ease. Growing up, and in the couple of years I'd been playing since returning from my hiatus, I was known instead for my marathon-length matches that resulted in a great familiarity with second skin. You may know it. It's the first aid tool you use for giant blisters. Tennis was, for me, a test of endurance, will, and tenacity. Just keep hitting back, be more stubborn than the other player, and more determined. And maybe you won't be surprised to hear this, but stubborn will does come naturally to me, so I won a lot of matches. But also, I won by way of self-injury, right? And while this worked somewhat when I was younger, it wasn't sustainable or possible in the long run. But on those courts, in the middle of Denver, and in that time-out-of-time experience, my will seemed totally irrelevant because I was a part of something. And with this something, I was invited to cooperate, to receive, to participate and love, to just love it all. It was revolutionary. This is a story about tennis, but of course, it is not just about tennis. Just as this is a sermon about places, but isn't really just about place. This is the magic of the thin place. A thin place is both incredibly local, entirely about the particulars of the sensory experience, the sights, sounds, smells, the touch. It's the opposite of an abstract or ideological concept. And yet it is this sensory experience that simultaneously allows us to access something far beyond these particulars. A thin place brings together the most tangible with the most intangible, the sacred by way of the profane. And although a thin place is about space, it is also fundamentally about time. For in them we recover our past, claim our present, and imagine a new future. We learn how to start over, and we imagine ourselves born anew. Now, as you heard in the reading, the idea of a thin place is a Celtic concept, traced back to the ancient pagans and later the Celtic Christians, who used it to describe, as travel writer Eric Weiner puts it, those mesmerizing places like the windswept Isle of Iona or the rocky peaks of Croagh-Patrick. Heaven and earth, the Celtic saying goes, are only 3 feet apart, but in thin places, that distance is even shorter. Thin places are beautiful, but not every beautiful place is a thin place. They are also not necessarily peaceful places, like in my story on the courts. Instead of the traditional ideas of tranquility or peace that we might associate with sacred sites, we would do better to engage this idea of thinness, as it points to their connection to life's fragility, its vulnerability, to the inherent risk in life, and yet the power in that vulnerability. As I described in my story, those thin places invite us into that paradoxical place of both calm ease and abundant energy. Thin places are not necessarily the places designated as officially religious or spiritual. A number of you I know have signed up to go to the new Mormon temple next week, and I'm guessing that the opulence we may find there, while it is a special religious site, may not be a thin place for many who would encounter it. With that said, thin places are often sacred sites. Last week, my family and I took a tour of Chimney Rock National Monument. It's outside of Durango. At the top of the site, there is this incredibly elaborate kiva built by hand by ancient peoples for religious and communal purposes. Now, in its view are the two geologic towers for which the monument is named, towers where every 18.6 years the moon rises perfectly between them, casting its light right over the kiva. Standing at the top amidst the fragments of a life that was, imagining these people so many centuries ago, I walked their same path, was looking at what they looked at, wondering to, breathing to, overwhelmed to with the beauty. This also is a thin place. Now don't be scared away, please, by the language that we used earlier about that thin veil between heaven and earth. I know sometimes Unitarians have what Reverend Christine Robinson calls a wintry spirituality, by which she means a spirituality that lives most comfortably in the realm of doubt and absence, rather than the more summery land of presence, faith, and transcendence. Which means that sometimes when someone talks about a holy site, you might respond with a shrug, figure you just don't have that religion gene. But those same wintry folks I found are often the ones that know the best meandering path through the Rockies, or the best campsite along the Poudre, or who stayed up late the past few days to see those streaming meteors shoot across the sky. Which is to say, spirituality is a word that means all kinds of things to all kinds of people. And despite what you might have heard, is not reserved for hearing the voice of God or even suddenly understanding everything about everything. Sometimes a spiritual experience is simply one of being overwhelmed by beauty, along with a sense of being somehow connected to that beauty. And yet, in that connection, a thin place does reveal something about who we are and about life itself, even about, as the quote on the cover of the Order of Service describes, might even help to understand something more about our essential selves. Just that sometimes we forget to or don't know how to access that deeper revelation. We are well practiced at describing the beauty or other aspects of a place that has moved us. But how? How did it move us? This is harder to put into words. Now think back to one of your thin places, a place where you felt connected to beauty and to everything. What happened in you when you were there? What was going on in your life at the time, and how did that place speak, encounter your story? What feelings were stirred up? And where in your body did you hold those feelings? Maybe most importantly, what were the values that you were in touch with when you felt connected to that beauty? What did the experience teach you about what really matters most? Our experience of a thin place becomes the most transformative when we engage it as a dialogue between our lives and then that place we are encountering. As writer Terry Tempest Williams puts it, bearing witness is not a passive act. Something active happens in us in our encounter of these places. Something transforms our spirits, our minds, our bodies, and as we change, so does the place that we encounter. On the tennis courts that evening, I felt ease. I knew grace. I knew beauty and wonder and awe. I knew what mattered most was joy and love and being apart. Winning, turns out, didn't matter. Hitting a great serve didn't even matter. Not really. And yet, amazingly, it's an ongoing lesson. Amazingly, by finding this place, I did end up winning more often, actually, and hit better serves than I'd ever hit. And it was all a lot more fun, fewer blisters. It is one of those great spiritual paradoxes that in releasing, you receive. And in the not wanting, you get what you need. Now, after all of this, we might wonder, given our common sense of the holy being everywhere, why we would consider some places to be thin and not others. As Peter Mayer's song, Holy Now, that we all love, and as it encourages, perhaps the challenge in life is not to look for miracles, but to find where there isn't one. And sometimes we can keep this sort of attention. We can stay present to the holy in everything, but speaking for myself, too often I live in that other place, that place of stubborn will and tenacious endurance, that thick place where it's hard to remember what really matters. We need a place out of the everyday, a place that we travel to either easily or through a long trek. We need that sense of pilgrimage so that we can, as Paulo Coelho describes, travel far in order to return home. Which is to say, the whole world may indeed be thin, but perhaps we are too thick to recognize it. We need that time out of time and place out of place to see the world as it actually always and everywhere is. As Eric Weiner says, maybe the thin places offer glimpses not of heaven, but of earth as it really is, unencumbered, unmasked, so that the thin veil is about seeing more fully into this world and this life, maybe even more into our lives. There is a lot about life today that seems like we just have to power through, close off, will our way, if not to winning, at least to surviving, even if it leads to blisters and perpetual weariness, even if we know in our hearts that it isn't sustainable or what we want. We grapple with increasingly chaotic and confusing questions, with both too much and not enough information. We feel both too connected and yet also profoundly untethered. Too often we have learned how to live with things that we shouldn't have to live with. Our encounter with thin places reminds us that this is not life's whole story. Thin places connect us instead to life's healing beauty, remind us that we are a part of this beauty, a part of joy, a part of transcendent love. Terry Tempest Williams uses the metaphor of a mosaic to remind us that even in the midst of brokenness, there remains in us and in life a great capacity for beauty. And that in the assembling and reconnecting of the broken pieces, in the ways we encounter and bear witness and transform, something even more beautiful becomes possible. By claiming and creating beauty in a broken world, we ground ourselves and call ourselves again and again to the way life should be, to the way life, perhaps, if we can live into it, to the way life already and always is. May it be so for all of us, for our lives, and for our world.